Hello and welcome back to the Talking Physiotherapy podcast. Today will be episode 35 and I'm joined by Connor and Lewis. We're having an internal podcast just discussing and kind of keeping up to date with each other to see what the crack is. There's been a few changes over the past few months and weeks and we're just gonna deep dive into that. So how you doing, lads?
Not too bad.
Doing all right, Lewis?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Doing good, Connor?
Yeah, how are you getting on, Frank?
Yeah, it's a busy time of the year, I suppose, with the tests and dissertation and different, even essays and stuff. You're just trying to juggle everything. It's the final furlong. So please God, everything goes all right, and I'm doing my best, like I know that, but please God, it goes all right and I do decent. And hopefully at the end of summer, I'll know a bit better. How I've got on. And then with placement actually. I thought I was going to Ireland, but a couple of different things happened, and I'm actually now going to Flint House, which is it's a police rehab thing, Connor. I think it's a rehab for policemen and stuff, and it's outside Reading, I believe. So I'm looking forward to going there. Apparently it's very good. A couple of the ones in the class have raved about it, saying yeah, great placement. It's MSK based, so it'll be nice to scrub up my skills after I get everything wrapped up. So yeah, please God, I get everything wrapped up at the end of May. And then yeah, you're straight back into it for 6 weeks in June to the middle of July. But yeah, I haven't even tell you the truth, I haven't really thought about it. It's just the dissertation and essays and getting ready for tests and stuff. So that has been my world at the moment. And then, well, obviously at the weekends I've been loving the sport, and the good weather, so it's all go.
That's good. The placement, yeah, I've heard good things about it. Obviously, not done one myself, but that should be interesting. With your studies and your dissertation and things, and coming towards the end, how have you found that? Is it been what you expected? Is there been any particular challenges that you found that might be useful for people to perhaps be aware of to help navigate?
So because I did finance, I hadn't did like a health dissertation, or I just wasn't totally fair with, the research side of things. I probably like I've did well in the tests and essays and stuff, Connor and Lewis, but I suppose I've found the research a wee bit hard, just grasp my head around it. I've got a bit better. I'm doing like a systematic review. It's a narrative synthesis actually I'm doing. So I like reading, in the articles, and we'll share them, and yous boys will be good. We'll be pinging them across to each other, good articles. I actually like that, and I like the evidence-based practice of keeping up to date with, fantastic physios from around the world that show evidence-based practice. This works. Give it a go with your clients, or athletes. But I don't personally think I would go down a research role after this. I know I definitely wouldn't. I'd be lying if I told you I would. I like the meeting of people. I like the rehab side of things. Just research probably wouldn't be for me. Although it's good to gain an insight. Look, I have a lot of respect for people who go and do PhDs and stuff, and publish papers, because there's a lot of work to it. And they really are experts in different niche areas, and they're very good with their methods. But for me, I don't know if I'm smart enough to go down that route, but I'll just keep to the rehab side of things probably. Please God, if I get out the other side, yeah.
What do you find so difficult about it? So I actually think half the battle for a lot of people is actually enjoying reading the articles. Like some people just don't have the time or the effort to actually s just sit through it. What parts of it do you actually find that are hard?
I suppose it's just the amount of reading, firstly, Lewis, and then, you'll maybe read 10 articles and it all comes down to the same thing. More research needed, warrants further investigation, and that they all kind of end up with, the same result at the end of the day. And this is after an immense amount of work, and it's kind of that whole is there anything new under the sun? And, you know, if you hear about a groundbreaking paper, you do hear about it. You're like,
yeah,
give this a go. But there's so many different published papers. I just be thinking, you know, to if I were to go and do work after this for years, and then you come out the outside and you're just like, oh, you know what, at the end of the day, the study quality isn't that great, and we haven't really pushed this on any further. Whereas I think,
I don't know if...
where I like physiotherapy, and everybody's different. It's, you know, meeting elderly people, young athletes, farmers, plumbers, whatever, and you can have an impact in their day. They'll be like, geez, you know what, actually, I did that exercise that you prescribed, and, you know, I'm getting a bit better there. That's probably how I find it. Whereas I know there's other ones in my class, they really like it, and they're like, they're getting on well. They're probably better than I am at the research side of things. But yeah, they enjoy it. But I don't really enjoy it.
I'm seeing a bit of a parallel there with the, I don't know if you would agree, Lewis, but the episode that we did with Tom Hughes from Man United, and how he had a little bit of a frustration around that being impactful and making a difference, and he kind of got advised to go into the research field and try and help to investigate things and try and I guess find effective ways or new things within the field. I feel like I see a little bit of a parallel between that kind of frustration of seeing the same thing over and over again and not being able to sort of see wood for the trees in terms of making a difference, or you know, it just gets a bit
redundant and repetitive.
Yeah. I'm pretty good at reading like non-fiction and fiction books. I'm telling you, I don't even want to look at a book recently. I'm stopping that iPad and the Mac, looking at different studies. If I want to chill out, I go for a walk or a podcast. I can't even be bothered reading as much. So it hasn't actually been that positive that way.
Yeah. I think it's definitely
something.
I was just going to say, it's different horses for different courses, like, isn't it, at the end of the day? And that's the variety that it offers you. Like, I quite like trudging through all that and sometimes finding nothing, and that I still think you always learn something from it. You know, whether that's what that impact, or the impact that has clinically, or whether that's actually just learning more about the fact that research is so heavily flawed and that there isn't a perfect way. But I definitely think there's value. I think there's value in getting your head around the research process in terms of how that carries over into clinical practice. Like, I find that what research has probably taught me is that there's so much gray area out there, and that gray area is probably the one thing that carries into your clinical practice, that, like, things are not as black and white as you think. You know, doing X, Y, and Z doesn't lead to pathology A or pathology B. And similarly in research, you know, it follows that same kind of process that you do sometimes end up at a dead end, or you do end up in a bit of a gray area where they do say, you know, further research is needed, or one type of study concludes that, I don't know, this type of treatment works, but then they've done a certain type of study, whereas another study that maybe wasn't as valid or wasn't as reliable will come out and say, well, it didn't work, you know, and then it just, but I think having that ability to go through that and disseminate that and come up with your own conclusion, I think that carries over into your clinical practice as well in terms of that gray area.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Like, obviously there is benefits to it. Like, you know, I can go and sit with my lectures and have a good discussion, because, you know, actually, from the start of the year, I know quite a bit more now, and I'm well enough versed. So there has been the understanding of the knowledge, and then even coming to different conclusions from different papers, you know, I'd be reading it, and be like, I don't really know if the quality of that's good. So as you say, it will have benefits when I go to a clinic or a job or whatever.
Yeah.
But you like trudging through it, as you say, but I don't really. I like reading
up-to-date
things. But yeah, everybody's different. Like, I know I would say the majority of my class, I'd say 70%. I don't know, obviously there'll be other students listening. Some people, it's for some people. And you can kind of tell the superstars that like that, and they're thinking PhD or masters or whatever. But you know, everybody goes their own path. Like,
it's quite interesting because I'm kind of living the whole dissertation thing again through, obviously, yourself, Frank, you're going through the process, and then my brother's coming to the end now, and he's kind of going through and asking me questions about things. But I think for me, the biggest one was that initial searching, and then that, you know, identifying your search terms and getting things refined down, and that capability to search and be specific with your search, but then be able to navigate through the sheer volumes.
Yeah.
And like you say, Lewis, be able to take on the board, the information from each of the papers, and not necessarily come to an immediate conclusion. It's normally just a swaying your thought process slightly. It doesn't necessarily mean X or Y. It's informing that information and knowledge that you already have prior to help you then in your practice. But yeah, it can be difficult, I think, as a student, like expecting it to be black and white, but it never really is that, which is probably one of the biggest things for me that was quite a struggle learning as you go through as a student into each year, you know, that it's not always as black and white as you might think. But that's actually quite freeing in some ways, like, yeah. Say, Lewis, like, you know, if it isn't black and white, then it helps you to be able to develop a well-rounded argument and be analytical about it, rather than it just be easy to say, yeah, it's that, or yeah, it's that.
Yeah, I think as well as that, I certainly had a hard time initially getting my head around the fact that, like, being completely honest, you're generally going into your dissertation with a question that you want to know, that you want to have an answer of, you know, you want to find the answer that you're looking for, essentially. That's the crux of it. It's something that you're half interested in, and you want to suss out that what you're looking for is out there. And I think getting the realization that that is unlikely to exist right from the offset, I think, is, again, what you said there about it being freeing. I think it's a wee bit freeing, and that it's unlikely that that answer is going to be out there, but trusting the process and even getting to a conclusion is a success, because that's a conclusion that wasn't there initially, you know. And whether you ever go down the line of getting it published or you don't get it published, you've come to a conclusion that wasn't there to answer that question in the first place. Like my piece of work, initially I was convinced that there would be enough evidence out there to support my argument. And then when I came to the conclusion, I was like, yeah, there's positive signs there, but it's not quite as concrete as I wanted. And then over the last year, we've been working to try and get it published, and probably about 4 or 5 months ago, we changed the angle of it slightly. And then in the last 6 weeks, we've changed the angle of it slightly again, and all that. And it's like managing spinning tops. And you're constantly keeping it going, but as you're keeping it going, the direction's changing, you know, and it just is all, it's constantly, no, that's not even a good example of it. It's like just a big stir, and you're just constantly adding stuff to it, and it's just keep going round and round, and you think it's smoothing out, and it's not, you know. It is a ball ache, but I think there's so many learnings from it, whether you hate it or not. I think there's loads to take away from it, whether that's even just from a skills perspective, like your organizational skills and your time management skills and just getting through it, or whether that's your critical thinking skills and your ability to disseminate information for what you're going to do clinically, or whether that's just your ability to break apart, you know, in the same way that
those complex arguments.
Yeah, and like I find that there's so much research out there that's kind of like a red herring, that it'll lead you down a particular path, but once you actually go down into the nuts and bolts of that research, the quality of it's not actually that good, so it doesn't lead you to the answer that you're looking for. And you find that in clinical practice all the time, where you think you're heading somewhere, and then all of a sudden that's a red herring and you're taken completely in a different direction. And I think it's just teaching you that.
That's all, you know. Obviously, you boys have lived it, so yeah, please God, not, you know, the end of the year, I'll be the other side of it. But yeah, bar that, I'm enjoying the sport and different things. But I know you boys have had a couple of informative months and weeks. do you want to tell everybody what you've got up with Connor and everything that's been going on in your life recently? Physio and non-physio even.
Yeah, if you insist. So I think most recently people would have known that I was at Luton Town Football Club in the academy there. So recently moved on from there in March time to the position I'm in now, which is first team physio at MK Dons. So, you know, probably worth saying as well that really appreciative of the work that everyone at Luton did and how they supported me there. It was brilliant, fantastic place to work and you know, really felt part of the team there, and I wish them all the best in moving forward, both academy and first team. But the kind of opportunity arose and it was one that I couldn't really turn down. So I'm really happy to be in the position I'm now. Really enjoying it. I think I've just about settled in. I've pretty much know everyone's name now, which is saying something because I'm pretty useless with names. And yeah, it's good. It's good to be here and the next sort of stage of learning, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you do. You must like the being in the in sport because you have went from one professional environment to another, obviously in the same domain of soccer. But yeah. Well, you see, with regards to moving to a different club, you're actually just saying there, sometimes you forget when you're moving job, you're meeting all these new players and, you know, you have to build a rapport with 30, you know, different players and remember their name and, you know, their injuries, you know, it sounds silly like, but you're enjoying it anyway. Yeah. I suppose you're coming to the end of the season. It's maybe a nice way to break in before pre-season as well.
100%. Yeah, I thought it would be a lot more challenging than it has been. Everyone's been really welcoming and supportive and the players have been brilliant. So they've made it easy for me, really. But you're right. It's it could be underestimated that, you know, even going from an academy setting where it's more youth players into an adult, more predominantly adult first team setting. Obviously, there's a few younger lads that will obviously progress through. So there's always that overlap. But it's brilliant. It's what I wanted. I always wanted to move into first team football. But I think having that grounding in the academy and the understanding of the adolescent and youth injuries has really helped me to kind of lay those foundations of learning down before I then move into a first team adult environment. But I think like you're saying, the rapport is massive, especially in a sporting environment where, you know, they're open to different things like media and other outside attention. It's important that they know that they can trust you with what you're going to do, because you'll see them at their sort of darkest hour and their moment of need the most when they're injured and they can't do the thing they love. So it's been really good and like I say, I'm really happy here and hopefully it will continue on for as long as I'm here.
What's been the biggest challenge so far? Apart from Grimsby away on the second night of starting work.
that was a rude awakening. No, it was actually all right. The changing rooms were a little bit smaller than I expected, but really good all the same. I was more than happy to get thrown in at the deep end. I think we've recently just had some force plates delivered, which we didn't have before then. So obviously we know how helpful they can be in a performance setting, so I'm really excited, along with the rest of the sports science and medicine department, to get hands on with those and use them to our advantage to help support the injured lads and the non-injured lads as well, actually. But the greatest challenge.
Side shuffle from the greatest challenge for a second. Why is it taken until now for force plates to come into a League Two team?
Ooh, that's a provocative question.
Well, sorry, maybe not necessarily just that, but like my assumption, and maybe that's quite naive, is that that would be in place already.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one. My outside view on it was that would be the case as well. I think we immediately think football teams and all clubs have access to everything. But in actual fact, I think it's a lot different for those that are in the league, leagues one and two, perhaps more so than the ones that are in Championship and Premier League, that access to, you know, through their budget, access to the funds that they need to buy things, it then gets trimmed down a lot more. So I think actually now we'll probably be, you know, on the minority rather than the majority if we've got force plates in the league that we're in. So, but like I say, it's really good that we've got them now. Biggest difficulty, I think, like you say, probably would be that it probably is the developing the rapport, the learning, you know, certain players' needs and wants and how they act and how they go about their business, and even just something simple like getting into the flow of tapings that need to be done before a training session, learning who has what. Some, you know, you take that for granted when you've been somewhere for a while, but when you're coming in and you're fresh to it, and say eight players need their ankles taped, just for example's sake, you know, each one of those will want something slightly different. So I think it's probably just purely that bedding in process. But I think I'm there now.
You might not know the answer to this, and in terms of like in the past, what would they have used in terms of like return to play testing or like return to run testing? Like, how would they have done that before?
Yeah, I'm probably making it sound a little bit more dramatic than it actually is. They did have force plays before, but they weren't valid. Okay. Sort of top tier force plates. So they were good, but not quite as accurate as perhaps effective or gold standard as you might think. But in terms of markers and clearing, it would have just been from other things, obviously using your handheld dynamometer, your clinical sort of markers. Obviously, the access to scanning in a first team environment is a lot more prevalent now. So you'd obviously couple that with your consultant sort of views and opinions, and then obviously the sports science and medicine department will work as an MDT to give their individual inputs on it. And then, like I say, obviously we did have the force plate, so that would help. But the ones we've got now would just be a little bit more accurate.
Nice to see that new kit coming in, because when you do go on the Twitter and Instagram, I think they're really the hot thing at the moment, aren't they? And you see everybody with the KPIs that you want to be hitting. But even I probably relate everything back to, you know, Gaelic and hurling, Lewis, from back home and stuff. It's good to see Ireland is, you know, there's a lot of places back home that are getting the use out of the Valid and the different four stacks that are out there.
I'd say the standard here is like, I'd say it's right up there. Like,
yeah,
you know, people, I feel like Ireland is like a little bit of a microcosm of really high quality physios that come out of there, and I think Gaelic, I think GAA is an association is a perfect breeding ground for that, for this type of stuff. Like, it's strange. Like, I've never worked without them. So I've thought multiple times, like, I don't know how I would get someone back to play with a particular injury without all of that stuff.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because I was literally I'd thought about it before, that, you know, is it actually perhaps a bad thing to have access to that equipment all the time, and to, with not having the equipment forces you to be a little bit more focused on your clinical assessment and the real bog basic physio stuff before you then get access to the stuff that will perhaps tell you the answer a little bit in some respect.
So I had this exact conversation on Tuesday around MRIs. So my thoughts are initially that you want to maximize your clinical assessment before you feel the need to get an MRI. MRIs are expensive, cost people money, cost people time, so on and so forth. But then now, having talked to a couple of people about it, my view probably hasn't changed, but it's shifted slightly in that your clinical assessment is there and is needed to be of such a high level to work out whether that patient warrants the need for an MRI. So I don't think the clinical assessment is there to give you the answer. I think it's there to inform the next step. You know,
yeah.
And I think it's the same with having that equipment. Like, I had two guys last week, and I'm definitely playing off a little bit of experience in terms of the injury that I've seen in the past. But basically, two of them came in with quad tears 2 days apart, and done clinical assessment on the first guy, and I had measured the site as I'd measured the site of tenderness as, I think it was like 17 centimeters or something like that of palpation tenderness. And out of all the patients I've had recently where I do measure that, I've noticed a trend of whenever I send them for an MRI, it comes back and it's, the tear is always about 20% bigger than what the area of palpation is. So I don't know if there's any evidence in that, but that's just something that I found. Anyway, so send them off and comes back and I says, I reckon this is going to be about 20 centimeters. Comes back, nail on 20 centimeters. But in my head, I had a suspicion that there might be some tendon involvement, and didn't have no clinical assessment's going to work out well if there's tendon involvement. But I had seen a couple of rec fem injuries before Christmas where some did have tendon involvement and some didn't have tendon involvement. And I just had an inkling that there might have been. I sent it for a scan, comes back, bit of tendon involvement. Not massive, but there's a wee bit of tendon involvement. But that completely changes how I'm going to rehab that, because there is tendon involvement and my clinical assessment can't suss that out. That also is going to dictate how long that player is going to take to go to return to play. And sometimes I'm like, if you don't have the access to the MRI or the ability to image or the ability to test in that way, there's no way you can work that out. And I don't think you're not providing the right service to that athlete if you can't offer that in 2024.
It's part of the clinical picture. It's part of the clinical picture. You almost can't operate without it if you're to provide an effective rehabilitation program.
Did you have much exposure in your placement? Because I know, like, students, I'm going to speak for myself, you know, I have to go and read about it, and it's all right reading about it. See, actually getting onto them decks and looking at the graphs and going, that's what's going on here, setting it up, getting them doing it. Like, there's a lot to be said for that. I haven't got that exposure yet, but
that's another element to it, isn't it? Learning how to use the equipment and then how to help it to inform what you're doing. Because, you know, you have to actually get that to them to be of use.
You need to know what you're looking for.
I
obviously had experience with it, with my placement being where I'm working. And that was fairly straightforward. It was like, right, we're going to be here for the next 5 weeks. We're going to show you how to use it and use it properly. Probably didn't have a great understanding of the force decks. Probably more comfortable in the force frame and the Nord board in terms of working out those. I think my understanding of the force decks has probably improved firstly from doing the Colin Griffin course on the calf and Achilles rehab in the day that he was going through it, and then Ben Ashworth's course for the shoulder, and you just kind of pick up nuggets in terms of what they're looking for. And, you know, sometimes you can pick up a trace on it that's not perfect, so then you have to edit the trace manually to get when rate of force development actually starts as opposed to when it picks it up, and so on and so forth. But I think the more you use it, I think the more it becomes tight, you get a tighter criteria time and time again. And like recently there, so like, for example, kind of without going off on a mad tangent here, counter movement jumps, we would have always measured counter movement jump in jump height. But now we've changed that we measure it in impulse momentum to calculate the jump height. And it's a more accurate measure. So instead of measuring jump height, was measured in the time that you were off the ground from, whereas now it's measured in the eccentric concentric momentum force divided by the flight time to get the height, which works out a good bit lower. So if you don't counter movement jump and we just measured the flight height and flight time, you would be much higher than what your impulse momentum would be. And it's just more detail is more accurate. But like, if you had told me that a year ago, I'd have just been like, I don't understand why I would change it. because I'm still just looking to measure what I'm looking to measure. But yeah, there's still stuff on it that I scratch my head over, like the reactive strength stuff. I find difficult to get my head around it. We have two different measurements for pogo tests and drop jump, but they both measure RSI, but they do it slightly differently. You know, there's so
it's multiple ways of doing the same thing, isn't it? Really,
and it's
as well. It's not. It's like don't get caught up with it as well.
And it's making sure. I think it's making sure you know what you're looking for. Like you can go down an absolute minefield of it, and there is a time and a place to do that. Particularly if it's like one of your long term rehab, or like an ACL or something, you need to go into that detail. You need to look at asymmetries on double leg jumping and what they're, you know, which side they're favoring on a double leg jumping, how they're taking off and how they're landing. You do need to go into that detail. But by and large, it's taking the core jumps that you see on Twitter and making sure that you're consistent and reliable with them.
Yeah, and the King showed that really nicely in that FA Medical Society CPD talk that he did the other day about how, you know, how much attention you need to pay to it, because visually you might see and think that, you know, right is versus left, but actually when you start doing the test and you do it properly, you realise that certainly isn't the case, and you can get lulled into that and then return them, and that's when you get your re-injuries and things like that.
I think it was actually him that had initiated us to change it to impulse momentum.
Okay.
But I can't remember the details of exactly why.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Anyway, Lewis.
Yes.
On to you. What's happening with you? What's the changes?
My news is that I'm moving to New Zealand in August. So by the time this is out, hopefully everyone will know. Yeah, going to New Zealand 10th of August. Looking forward to it. Massive change. No real specific reason to go, apart from the fact that I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. New Zealand or Canada, probably. And then, I'm just kind of like, perfect time to go. I'm 24, I'll have a year's experience under my belt. Obviously, have done plenty of traveling with Connor here, so it'll be a bit weird traveling without him. But
you'll manage fine, mate.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We're going to Christchurch in the South Island, so just kind of getting everything in place at the moment in terms of registration and then getting a job and then getting a visa and getting all that stuff set up. But hopefully I should be okay. I'd love to get a job similar to what I've got now, but there's obviously no guarantee of that. But we'll see.
Yeah, but I think the physio down there, they're like nearly incentivized to go, you know, the way it's structured down there, isn't it?
Yeah, so a physio has like an express pathway. So you've got like a general pathway and an express pathway. So people from the UK and Ireland go on the express pathway, which is easier to get your registration. So there's like a direct transfer over. So I've submitted it. I just need to get a couple of documents signed and then send them off, and hopefully I'll get my registration from there. I think as well, from people I've spoken to, the standard of physio in Australia and New Zealand's really high. So if I can get in somewhere decent, hopefully I can learn a lot. Plus I think, like, from an experience point of view, I think it'll be good to work with a completely different culture. You know, I treat people that I'm around every day and people that I'm familiar with every day. So I think stepping out of that comfort zone will be good. I suppose actually probably one of the reasons why we have decided to go now is I feel very comfortable in the job that I'm in, and I feel uneasy that I'm comfortable in the job that I'm in. You know, I feel like I could just work in this forever and a day. You know, I'm happy, I'm content. I challenge myself every week. You know, it pushes me and I feel like I push it, but I don't like that that's the case so early on. So I know that that's what I want. I can come back to it at any point when I want. So I think I just need to be a bit more uncomfortable here for the next couple of years and then go back to what I like, I suppose.
Certainly exciting. And I wish you all the best. It's not like you're, I mean, you are going to the other side of the world at the end of the day.
Podcast on tour.
Yeah, and it should be really interesting to see what content and ideas and research and ways of sort of thinking and practicing that you can draw out of there and then perhaps share with us on this podcast. And that'd be kind of another added benefit to all the people that want to listen, because I'm sure there'll be some different stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like definitely that is certainly one of the intentions, is that if I could get, you know, people that I'm working with or people that I make connections with out there and expose what they do to everyone that listens over this side, I think that can help everyone. Plus I think that's something a little bit different and a little bit interesting that we don't really get exposure to. Like we know that Australia and New Zealand produces really good research, we know that they produce really high quality physios, but we don't actually hear anything in terms of what happens day to day. And do you know, like we're talking about forced X tests and they're like, what do they do different to what we do over this side? And do they listen to the same professionals that we listen to every day? And you know, we probably only really hear a lot of like McHugh's type work over here. Who else is over there that they talk about? Plus who over here do they listen to over there, type of thing. So yeah, no, it'll be good. And then loads of traveling and cycling and hiking and in the outdoors without rain, or certainly with less rain than I get here.
Fingers crossed. One last question for you, Lewis. What, because I think it might be useful for people listening, is, or for the ones that might think that they want a career change, how has that process been? Obviously, you know, going to work in New Zealand, how has that been, you know, the forms and what you need to do and set up? And, you know, is it simple? Is it quick? Or does it take a while? Is there things to bear in mind that you wouldn't know already?
So far, I'd say relatively straightforward. I would say that, so actually getting the registration requires you to do two cultural courses, which are relatively straightforward. They're time consuming, but they need to be done. They take a wee while, and then it's just about making sure you get all your documents in place. Like whenever I was talking to the guys that I work with, none of them had their transcripts from university, so they had to go to the uni, request that from the uni, get that sent out to them, and then send it off. Whereas at Bradford, we had just got the login for our here. No, yeah, our here trans. Is it?
Yeah, you're talking about, yeah.
Where you just downloaded it and you got access to it straight away. So I had done that to get my transcript. I know documents I had to get certified by a solicitor. I'd got a couple of them certified, and then I got confused on a couple of other ones, because they were signed by the HCPC, and then the other one was signed by Access NI or NI Direct, but they needed to be certified for a solicitor, so I'm waiting for that to get done. And then probably the only stumbling block that I've hit so far is that because I had studied in England, I need a police check for the UK, whereas I had just done an Access NI. So people in England are not going to know what an Access NI is, but I had only done my police check for Northern Ireland, thinking that that was a UK wide one. So I'm waiting for that to come back before I submit all those other all the rest of the documents certified by my solicitor. But then once that's done, fingers crossed, I should be good to go. I think probably the only real thing is that kind of timing the jobs. Like I've been looking for jobs, or just kind of nosing. Like I haven't sat down and been like, right, I need to apply you this and this. Like I've still got a couple of months. I wouldn't apply this far out for a job here, so I don't feel like I need to do it there either. But I suppose the one thing I'm a wee bit nervous about is I've never done an interview for a job before. So and it's wee things I got there that are going to be new and different that I've never exposed myself to. I've never had to really tailor a CV for a job either. So yeah, they're going to be the couple of challenges that I'm going to be facing over the next couple of weeks.
You'll be grand with that. You'll be dead on. Once you get talking and have a bit of cracking.
Well, that's what I'm kind of hoping. It's like it just becomes a conversation as opposed
I know that obviously you're looking at the physio aspects there, but taking it maybe looking all because I'm a student, I'm thinking, you know, New Zealand, humble, it's like a farming country. They're pretty, you know, they're steeped in humility and respect. I think coming from Ireland and this part,
they're very similar.
Yeah, very similar. So yeah, I'd say you'll get on. It'll just be. The weather might be a wee bit better than Tyrone now, but you'll enjoy it.
I've only heard rain for the last. This is no word of a lie. I don't even know if Collie listens to the podcast, but in like middle of July time, it was raining in the first like month of my job. Rained every single day, and he said to me, "He's like, it's going to rain every single day for the rest of the year." And I'm no joke. Apart from maybe one week in September, the first week of September, where everyone's going back to school. It has literally rained, I would say, every day. Maybe apart from last week there as well. But it's wild.
And what was that one of the big reasons? Like, obviously, the physios in Australia.
Honestly, right up there. Just completely fed up with weather. Like, I think, like, mentally I rely so much on being outside and being in fresh air and being able to do things and not being able to do that. It doesn't really weigh me down as such, because then I just train inside, but it's not the same. But honestly, I'd say it would be
because you're such an outdoorsy person. Like, you know, you want to be out, and there's definitely something about the sunlight. Like, I understand. Flip, every time I go on my phone, I think half a Nuri's in Australia, and the weather looks good.
Seriously.
It does look good down there. But then, you know, home's brilliant with the people. But yeah, I'm sure you'll love it.
It's very real, isn't it? Like, there's a reason why people get seasonal depression. It's just from the darkness and the cold and the rain and the poor weather. So, like, if that's going to improve your quality of life, and then you're going to improve professionally and then personally at the same time, then why the hell not? Especially when you're young still. You need to be challenged.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like a wee bit of the mindset of, listen, at the end of the day, it's just a job, you know, and your job and your life probably, well, I feel like I probably try and blend the two of them as best I can, that I try to be as active because I want to kind of practice what I preach. And it's so much more difficult to do that when it's balling the rain and the roads are flooded and you can't do any of the fun stuff that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't think we would talk about that in this podcast.
Try and separate. You don't want all your self-worth tied up in, you know, your job. Like, you want to, like, I know my best mates, I couldn't care less what they do. You're going on character, but obviously when you're so steeped in being active, it is a big draw going to places with nicer climates.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm
and
sure
also a place that's also very active as well. Do you know, like, I don't think I could see myself in like a place that, you know, they just put the feet up and just absorb the res, or like a big massive city where you're kind of stuck with buildings everywhere, and you know, everywhere you turn around is just a high-rise building. Like, I think you need that fresh outdoors. Like where we live, Frank, relatively is perfect.
Just the weather. Like, I know what you're saying, because,
and even Connor said whenever he came over here, he was like, "Oh, I see why it's class."
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Do you like it over? You've been over a few times, have you, Connor?
Yeah, just once, but once was enough to see why you guys rave about it so much. I like being similarly outdoorsy, you know, countryside rather than in the city, and yeah, just being active and enjoying the outside. So. Yeah, I can see exactly the reasons, Lewis, to be fair to you, now you've explained it, even if it does hurt a little bit. But no, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm sure you'll have loads of little nuggets of
information. We'll be jealous when you pop up all the nice stories of good weather and around New Zealand. Yeah, no, but best luck with Lewis. And,
thanks very much.
I'm sure I ring a work out, you'll get a job, no bother. And once you get a month over you, it'll just be like clockwork. You'll be thinking to yourself, geez, was it any ever different?
Yeah.
Brilliant, lads. Good chat. Is there anything else we wanted to touch on?
We'll not talk about the league. Don't wanna.
No, that we will not talk about.
We'll not talk about it. You know, heartbreak every April, boy. Used to be January. Now it's April, so we're pushing it out. It'll be a tight enough few weeks here. If Arsenal can keep the foot in the gas, and I can't see City slipping up. So that's kind of taking my mind at the weekend. It's good to see a bit of Gaelic football on the hurling too. So no, that's all I can really talk about sport on the uni work.
Good stuff, lads. Brilliant. Been great to chat to you. Thank everyone for listening to episode 35 of the Talking Physiotherapy podcast. Just one quick plug before we leave. Do stay tuned for the next episode, but also in recent weeks and months, we've been recording some podcast episodes with physios in sport, which will be put into a series and should be released very soon. So check out Physios in Sport or ACPSEM for the content that should be released in the near future. Thank you very much for listening. And bye for now.